if deep institutional reform and change is not feasible, at least in the short run, what this project shows is there is a viable, low-cost, short-run alternative that is just trying to identify and leverage the skills that are there.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Sierra Leone stands at the bottom of international rankings for government effectiveness and public services, and tasks like the provision of public infrastructure or local justice tend to be dominated by autocratic traditional chiefs, and they often don't have the technical skills that these tasks require. So are there ways to encourage them to delegate their power or to include others in their decisions? Kate Casey of Stanford University is one of a team of researchers who've been working on this problem, working on it for quite a while, and she joins me now. Kate, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thanks, Tim. It's a pleasure to be on the pod.
Who typically are these traditional chiefs? Why do they have this much power?
That's a great question, Tim. So Sierra Leone, like many other countries, has a historic system of traditional authority that predates colonial interventions and largely sits alongside more contemporary efforts at what people would call modern state building. They, in this context, generally are older males. So in the data, the average age of the chiefs in the sample is about 60, which doesn't sound very old from wealthy country perspective, but in lower income countries with lower life expectancies, these are older. Almost all of them are men, and they typically are farmers. So almost 90% of the chiefs in our sample are subsistence farmers.
And what sort of decisions do they end up making then?
They have very wide-ranging authority. So importantly, they hold the land sort of in trust for the community. So they can allocate parcels of land to different community members. They run the local justice system. So they do a lot of dispute mediation. And they're in charge of just kind of a suite of local public goods and services. So they have the authority to marshal contributions of labor, financial contributions, in-kind contributions for the community.
I'd made the assumption in the introduction that their decision-making is not good. Do we actually know this?
I wouldn't say it's a question of, is their decision-making good or bad? I think the question is, what are the skills needed for contemporary efforts at local economic development? And do the chiefs have the requisite skills? So I think a little bit of background here is important. So Sierra Leone had a very brutal civil war in the 90s, which was preceded by a couple decades of really poor government provision of any kind of basic public goods and services. So what that means is people had very little access to education until relatively recently. So at the end of the Civil War, the government of Sierra Leone and its donors partners made a huge push to and were successful in achieving pretty much universal primary school education. But the chiefs really were too old to benefit from this. So what you have is you have this real generational divide in terms of access to education and the human capital that people have. Bringing that back to local development, I think the big question is, how can you best leverage the talent that you already have in the community? And if you think about building infrastructure, like building a latrine, repairing a primary school, water wells, these are somewhat complex activities. So, for example, you need a budget, you need a plan, you need to manage contractors, and basic skills like literacy and numeracy, you could think would be quite useful in this process. And that's kind of the crux of the issue.
What types of intervention did you try in this experiment to try and improve governance?
So there are two general classes of intervention that we were interested in. One is trying to identify who are the high-skill individuals in the community. And another is trying to think about, what if we just open broader participation to all the varied opinions and skills of community members? So that second one is rooted, you alluded to this in your intro, that the chiefs tend to be autocratic. So what does that mean? It means, as I said, they're elite, they're male, you actually have to be part of certain what they call ruling families. So lots of people are not represented directly in this institution. And then the second is, let's just try to find that technocratic skill. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be trying to look at both of those in parallel.
So when you try to identify these technocrats, these skilled people, first of all, what sort of skills are you looking for in this context? Or what sort of skills are you trying to develop?
So the skills that we're looking for are really the kind of skills that you need to develop and implement local infrastructure, right? So if you think about, you know, building a drying floor, right? So you need some cement, you need some contractors, you need to find the right place, you need to develop a budget. You're going to have to basically source some external capital. So you're going to have to convince some level of government or an NGO to fund your project. So you need time management, you need to be persuasive, you need to be able to corral community members to help you out, you need to be able to communicate, figure out what people want, what is the good that they're really going to use. Those are the kind of really nuts and bolts skills that we're interested in.
And when you're looking at wider participation, what does that actually mean? What type of participation are you thinking of?
This is really thinking about people that are excluded from the traditional system of having direct voice. So women, very obviously, so I said 98% of the chiefs in the study sample are men, so including women, including younger men, and fundamentally trying to make it a more inclusive and more democratic decision-making process where people are coming together, everybody has a voice, everyone brings their own skills and perspectives to bear, and the community as a larger unit makes decisions that reflect this kind of diversity of people that are there.
How does that work in practice? How do you structure this participation?
So this paper has two overlaid experiments. So one is a very long-running experiment and over several years, starting really in 2005. And this was what's called a community-driven development program. So this was implemented by the government of Sierra Leone with the World Bank. And what it did was two things. So one, it provided block grants for the provision of local public goods, but these block grants were quite a long time ago. So most of these were between 2005 and 2009. But it also provided a lot of direct assistance to the community to set up more democratic systems of government. So, for example, a village development committee, which had multiple members, a third of which were set aside that had to be for women. There's a lot of emphasis in women and young men attending meetings, developing by consensus plans for what the community would do. So this is a very intensive, long-running project that aimed to directly build out the local infrastructure, but at the same time, democratize and make decision-making more inclusive, which in best-case scenario would then set these villages on a trajectory of stronger kind of collective action that would outlast the direct financing. That was the hope for the participation aspect. The technocratic aspect came much later. So this was really a very light touch intervention. A local team would go into a community, assemble a very large public meeting. And this is in the context of local elected governments at this time were running this competition for infrastructure grants. So you communities could put forward, you know, I want to build 5 wells. This is where we're going to do it. This is the plan. It's about 3-page application. You have to have a budget. And then they competitively scored these proposals and allocated grants for about $2,500 to the best proposal. So what these teams did, they went into communities, described this competition, and said, okay, so to be successful, you're going to need to find someone who can lead this proposal process, right? So here are some skills that they're going to need, you know, reading, writing, planning, budgeting, managing implementation. And then in the public meeting, what the team said was deliberate amongst yourselves and come up with 5 people that you think are going to be really good at this particular task, including the chief, because of course you could always have the chief run the process, because that's kind of what would happen in sort of default, and get back to us. That's using local knowledge about who are these high-skilled people that are already there that might be good at this. So that's the first step. The second step is a screening process. So we took these 5 people and the chief and in private had them do a pretty simple test that is trying to evaluate these skills. For example, you know, costing out a kind of common infrastructure project. And then we scored these tests. And so we now know an objective measure of technocratic skills. The experimental variation is then whether or not you have a big public nudge that says, okay, we've done this process. You guys gave us these nominees. We gave them a test in private. And actually, this person came out with the very highest score. So why don't you guys think about putting this person in charge of this proposal, right? So it's a very public nudge. So you get the community knowledge to find who's high skill. You hone that with a technocratic test, and then there's a big public nudge to say, why don't you put this person in charge?
So you very carefully set up the conditions for the experiment. How do you evaluate whether outcomes are better or not?
Yes, well, that is the heart of the matter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So there are two things. First of all, almost every single community in the sample put in an application for these proposals.
Yeah.
So that just shows you there is huge demand for grants and public infrastructure in these pretty rural and poor communities. So what we did was we were working in collaboration with the district government. So we have access to all the proposals. So we have three measures of the quality of the proposal. One is just how the governments themselves rated proposals. Another you can think about is you have a team of RAs scoring the completeness of the proposal. If you're supposed to say we're going to do A, B, C, D, did they actually list A, B, C, and D? Like, are there four components? And then mm-hmm. there's a more nuanced expert where we have some development practitioners score them kind of more cohesively. And there's sort of three measures of the proposal quality. And then, of course, mm-hmm. there's a probability that they actually won the grant, right? So that's the big one. And then at the end of the day, we can also do some assessment of the quality of the public good that was constructed, but that's a very small sample.
So, how did our technocrats do in these situations?
Well, the technocrats did really very, very well.
Great.
If you look at proposals coming from villages that are just in the, let's say, the pure control group. So this is just, they didn't have the community-driven development project. They weren't nudged to put the technocrats in control. So essentially, you have the default of the chief is in charge. If you can mm-hmm. compare those to ones we also didn't have community-driven development, but where the community was kind of this public nudge to put these technocrats in charge, those technocrats, the quality of proposal is close to 0.4 standard deviations units better in quality. Now, that's arcane measure, but this is a pretty big effect. They are much higher quality proposals, and they're 10 percentage points more likely to win an actual grant. So that is just a huge difference.
Okay, so what about when wider participation was used? How well did that work?
If you just look at having communities that have participated in community-driven development over several years
mm-hmm.
and those that didn't, there is no statistical difference in the quality of the proposal or the likelihood of winning a grant.
Oh, I see. So what's the mechanisms behind this here? Why is one very effective and the other doesn't seem to be effective at all? What's going on?
So I think it's nice to kind of just trace through the steps in the causal chain. So think about the technocratic selection first. So there's a couple of things that need to be true for this to work. The first mm-hmm. is that this nomination and testing needs to actually identify higher skilled people than the chief. And because we also gave the chief the assessed in private, we can say absolutely the community nominees scored much higher on this technocratic mm-hmm. test than the chief. So we found those people. The second thing, you need that score on the test to mean something in the real world. And what we can mm-hmm. show is that higher test scores correlate with higher quality proposals, right? So the test is picking up something meaningful that predicts performance in this competition. And then the third thing you need to have is that this nudge actually changed who was in charge. And so we have, like, at the local governments, when community members were submitting proposals, sort of asked them a series of questions about who was in charge of different aspects of the proposal. And we see that the public nudge actually had a very big impact in shifting responsibility away from chiefs and towards these more high-skill community members. So that's the mechanism that lines up to show how this light-touch nudge worked. For a subset of the technocrats, there was also a one-day training that was offered, mm-hmm. which is really just in the basic budgeting proposal, all the basic management skills you need for the proposal. And that also greatly enhanced their performance in terms of the quality of proposal. So it's very light touch. It was one day sort of intensive training. So that also topped them up a bit. We can think about why are we not seeing big differences in these proposals for the participation arm, this community-driven development arm. So if you work through the same steps, we found higher skilled people, but the people put forward by the community in the CDD arm really don't look any different on their observable characteristics than in the controls, right? So, for example, they weren't more likely to put a woman forward. They weren't more likely to put younger people forward. They found high-skilled people, but they didn't do so in any kind of differentially better way. And then, more importantly, while the experience with community-driven development did make chiefs more likely to delegate, even in the absence of a strong nudge, that difference just wasn't large enough to have a really tangible impact on the quality of the proposal at the end of the day. So they were kind of more democratic and inclusive on the margins, but the public nudge just blew well past that in a much shorter time frame.
So, Kate, your technocrats, they did really well, but they did really well at a specific task that you had defined and measured. Is the insight that we get from this relevant, do you think, for a broad range of the sorts of tasks that fall to these local chiefs?
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely is measured with reference to a specific task. And so in that regard, I said this is a proof of concept. I'd say the premise that you want to match skills to the task at hand is quite a generalizable idea, right? So, I mean, for one thing, there is a ton of local public goods and services that these communities are in fairly desperate need of. You could apply for external funding to fund a whole suite of infrastructure in these communities. But you could also think of broader things. You have to budget and do development plans on a recurrent basis. Sierra Leone is a relatively low level of economic development. So as the central state is nation building efforts are strengthening the central state, it takes a while for the central state to work its way into rural areas, right? Which is part of a big decentralization reform agenda that has been going on since 2004. But as you're waiting for the central state to make its way down to you, there's a lot of public goods and services that have to be provided at the local level, and that will only increase over time. So I think in that regard, yes, this is a specific task, but the principle of matching the right people for the job, I think, is quite generalizable.
Now, how do we think about these two different ways of decision making? Could we argue that collaborative decision making, if it works, is always necessarily better than having a bureaucrat or a technocrat? Or is it really more important in these contexts? Look at the results.
The answer is yes, you have to look at the results. And no, we can't make broad statements about that. It's actually nuanced why we can't, and in a way that I think is a little bit interesting. So because the CDD program was not successful in democratizing local villages, even though we have this large experiment to compare democracy to non-democracy, it didn't work. So these villages aren't perceptively more democratic than the control group. So we don't actually have any exogenous variation in whether democracy exists at the, or the strength of democracy at the local level. But that's interesting because from a policy perspective, if deep institutional reform and change is not feasible, at least in the short run, what this project shows is there is a viable, low-cost, short-run alternative that is just trying to identify and leverage the skills that are there. So while you're waiting for the deep institutional strengthening and broadening its reach across the country, there's some very practical things you can do to facilitate development.
And where we started off with this is describing the situation in Sierra Leone, which is a particular type of situation in which people with power have, or had when this started, because it's been running for a very long time, very low levels of education. Can these results tell us anything about other situations? There are many places where the local authorities, people in charge locally, would have much higher levels of education, for example.
Yeah, neither of these kind of thorny questions about external validity, right? Would something like this work in a very different situation? So those are always hard to answer definitively. But you know, there's a few things that matter. So one, as you said, what is the skill level of the local leadership? And what is the skill level of the local population? So if local leaders are much higher skilled than local community members, you might get less of an effect from delegating. But also, if you think historically in Sierra Leone, if we tried to do this 20 years ago before these big investments in education, the return may have been lower because the local community was also cut out from access to formal schooling. So coming back to this broad idea of how do you best leverage the resources that you have, including local talent and matching talent the skills needed for a particular task is pretty generalizable. There's a paper that is in a vastly different context. So he and Wang have this really nice paper in China that's basically showing sending young college graduates to local governments in China really has a big impact on like targeting and implementation of social systems. So that is a vastly different context where the same idea, do we have some young, talented, high human capital people that we can bring to bear on local government? I think, yeah, there's a lot of potential for it in a variety of contexts.
Well, it's a fascinating piece of work. It's a lot of hard work, but with some very interesting results. It really does make you think. Kate, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim, so much. Pleasure to be with you.
The paper is called Skill versus Voice in Local Development, and the authors are Catherine Casey, Rachel Glenister, Ted Miguel, and Martin Vors. And it was published in the Review of Economics and Statistics in 2023. That's volume 105, number 2, if you want to go and look for it. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where we also have articles about the papers we feature.